Hey everybody, so it's 1:30 now, so we'll go ahead and get started. I want to welcome you all here today. Thank you for coming along this afternoon. My name is Paul Andrew, and I'm a technical product manager on the Office 365 team. My areas of focus are identity management and network performance, and a couple of other things. And today, this is an introduction to identity management with Office 365. So if you're not here for an introduction to Office 365 identity management, you're in the wrong room. But it's great to see so many people here today. Identity management is one of those things that you have to do something about it before you can use Office 365. And in many ways, it does appear complicated on the outset. So with this talk, I hope to give you some easy advice and simplify some of what you'll need to understand about identity management for Office 365. My goal is to sort of demystify some of those things that make it appear complicated and help you to make good choices there. So in this talk, first I've got a few slides just to do some very introductory pieces of identity management to introduce some terms and that sort of thing. It's okay, you don't have to learn the terms to understand the rest of the talk, but we'll go through those first. And then I'm going to talk about three models that we have for identity management with Office 365. And they are cloud-managed identity, synchronized identity, and federated identity. So I'll describe each of those three models and talk about what it is. And then I'm going to tell you about how you can switch between them if you need to and give you some advice about how you choose which model you want to use right now. And maybe you want to change the model in the future, or maybe you want to give your friends or your customers, if you're deploying Office 365 for other people, advice about how to do that. So then there's a couple of other things at the end that we'll talk about to wrap up, and that's going to be the talk. All right, so the first introductory piece of information is just to talk about identity management at Microsoft. Now, Microsoft has two identity management systems. One is specifically for consumers, and the consumer one is called the Microsoft account. Some people will remember it as Live ID. Some people may remember it as Passport. People with longer memories may remember it as other names as well. But it's called the Microsoft account. And it is an account that a consumer, anyone here, can go and create with Microsoft on www.live.com. We can go to www.outlook.com. And we'll create an individual account that you could use for email, for OneDrive, and various other things that Microsoft makes available. And that is an account, when you sign up for that, that's an agreement between Microsoft and a consumer. There is some text there in that agreement, you do agree to some terms, and it's something you have one account. And you can use that account to share with other people, but there's a few things that you don't have with that account. Your company doesn't own that account. Your company can't allocate new accounts for new employees. The employees have to do that and agree to the terms. So we also have this organizational account. Which is known as which is implemented in Microsoft Azure Active Directory. And when you create a directory in Microsoft Azure Active Directory, you're creating a tenant as an organization, and you can then hand out those user accounts to your users. So Office 365 uses Microsoft Azure Active Directory. It has, ever since we first launched Office 365 as a SaaS offering for Office services. And when you create an Office 365 tenant, you can go and add users for your partners, for your employees, for whatever people you want. And Microsoft doesn't have any agreement with the end users that you are creating. Microsoft has an agreement with you. You've subscribed to Office 365 or perhaps another SaaS service from Microsoft. So we certainly have an agreement with you. You're probably paying a subscription of some kind. But we don't have any interaction with your users. We won't send your users any advertising email. We don't have access to your user's account, and that's something that you own. So there's a very different sort of separation of ownership and context with those two different types of accounts that we have. Now, and sometimes it's inconvenient. Sometimes you have to log in with one or the other, and we're working to improve some of those things. But there are very good reasons why we have these two accounts. We keep them in separate parts of our data center. We don't commingle that data. So I have three identity models that I want to talk to you about today. The first is cloud identity, and the second is synchronized identity, and the third is federated identity. Now, there's two parts to how these identity models go together. The first aspect is where your usernames and their attributes and passwords, where those are stored and where those are managed. So getting those usernames into the right place so that in email you can get a global address list and add someone to an email message because you see them on a list. In SharePoint, you can get the people picker and you can see the people who are in your organization and share files with them. It's important to have that user directory. So we have that user directory as part of Office 365. And then the other part is we need users to be able to sign in. We need to validate their passwords to make sure that they can sign in. So these two things come together in these three different models, and I'll talk about how they come together in each one. So before I do that, I want to introduce a little bit of terminology and tell you a little bit about some of the things that we think about when we're talking about identity management with Office 365. So I talked about that directory just a moment ago, and if you look at the yellow box that says directory there, you might have a directory on-premises in your servers. It might be Active Directory, it might be some other directory, and we need to synchronize and get that up into Windows Azure AD, Microsoft Azure AD, I'm sorry, so that you can look up those users and get access to them. And primarily this is about looking up those users. We also need that to be able to assign user licenses for Office 365, and we're going to use that as the basis of those users signing in. But when the users do sign in, we treat that as a separate operation. We have to verify their password, and sometimes that's done using a federated sign-in model where we federate the identity provider, the other yellow box that we have there, with Microsoft Azure AD. And so the identity provider will do the password validation for us. So that's what federated sign-in means. Other times we won't do federated sign-in. We'll actually just have Microsoft Azure AD do the password validation itself. So there's a difference there that we'll talk about. Azure AD has various endpoints that you can connect to it. You can access the data that's in Azure AD. You can use them for other purposes. And it has some endpoints which are used as part of that federation model, such as AWS Federation, AWS Trust, and SAML. Now, when an authentication has happened and we know that the user is valid, their password's okay, then we're going to use a token which the Office 365 services will use to be able to identify and validate that that user is signed in okay. So we use this token, we post it to SharePoint Online or Exchange Online to say, hey, this user is okay and they're good to go. Now, the sign-in on these different services is currently done in a couple of different ways, and we have a mechanism for authentication or testing a user's password called passive auth. And we say it's passive auth because the application, Outlook Web Access is a good example, doesn't have to do very much. Outlook Web Access just has to point to the identity provider, and the identity provider will show a login screen, validate the password, and send a token to Exchange Online. So Outlook Web Access actually doesn't do very much there. We call that passive auth, and it's typically done by web-based applications. And so SharePoint Online will use passive auth, and Outlook Web Access will use passive auth. The Office 365 portal will also use passive auth. There's another method that we currently use, which is called active auth. Active auth means the application does something. So this is where Outlook will show a enter your username and password dialog box, and Outlook has to grab that username password and send it off to Exchange Online over an encrypted link. Or where the Office sign-in assistant on behalf of Word, Excel, PowerPoint will show a username and password box, actively grabs that detail, and the sign-in assistant uses AWS Trust and connects with Microsoft Azure AD and validates the password that way. So that's what passive auth and active auth means. And then you've got Bob. Bob's the user. Bob's the user who's signing in, so he's just the extra part of that diagram there. All right, enough about terminology. Let's move on. And the first of these three identity models that I want to talk about is the cloud identity model. Cloud identity model is really easy. All of the identities are created in Office 365, and passwords are managed in Office 365. Actually, they are in Azure AD, but you'll just see them in Office 365, in the Office 365 Admin Center, where you can press this plus sign here in the UX, and you can create a new user, and you can add some details for that user. And then you can change various settings. You can add licenses for Office 365 settings, and then you're done, and you get a default password. The user goes and changes their password, and then they're signing in. And they can sign in from Office 365 Pro Plus applications, such as Word, Excel. They can sign into Outlook, Outlook Web Access, SharePoint Online, all of these things using these user accounts. And they're all managed up in the cloud. And, you know, this is a really easy way to get started with Office 365. You don't have to do any on-premises integration, and that's okay. We'll look at how you can start with a cloud identity in a little bit and migrate that maybe into one of the other models. I've actually seen companies with up to 200 PCs use this model and actually have no on-premises servers whatsoever. So if you're that way inclined, you don't want to have anything on-premises apart from your printers, and your laptop and desktop computers, this is a great model for you. So I want to talk about the synchronized identity model. And whilst cloud identity model is the easiest to set up, synchronized identity model is the one most people use. So we'll talk about this in a lot more depth. We'll also talk about it in more depth because it does have on-premises servers and there is a little bit more to configure here. So in the diagram, you can see you have an on-premises directory with some files in the folder there, or user accounts with their attributes. Lots of people already have Active Directory or some other on-premises directory where their users are stored. So what we want to do is we want to synchronize those up to Office 365 so that you don't have to retype them in or import them or do any other stuff. We use this tool called DirSync, which will run on a server on-premises, and every 3 hours, it will take a look at your on-premises directory, see if anything's changed, and send those changes up into Office 365. And so that's how we make sure we synchronize those accounts and details. DirSync can also synchronize a password hash, so it will get the password hash out of Active Directory, run some additional hashing algorithms on it, and then it will synchronize that password hash up to Office 365 as well. It does this every 2 minutes. And this means that users can go and sign on to Office 365 directly, and Microsoft Azure AD can validate the password, all the details are there, and the password is the same as your on-premises password. So that's the synchronized identity model. And I want to talk a little bit more about the synchronized identity model and just give you a bit of a flavor for things that you need to do, how you set it up, what it looks like, and we'll walk through what you need to do to actually set it up. So there's a few things that we recommend to do before installing DirSync. DirSync's actually available directly in the tenant, so you can download it from there and run it. It's really easy to do. Before you do that, we recommend that you run this tool called IDFix. It's a tool from the Office 365 team, which will take a look at your Active Directory, your on-premises directory, and see if there's anything that you know may need tidied up or cleaned up. If anyone's ever done a cleanup of your directory, there can be some work involved depending on why you're doing it. My general rule of thumb, and I don't have any evidence to back this up, is that if you first implemented AD 10 years ago or more, then you're probably most likely going to have issues which need remediated before you synchronize to Microsoft Azure AD and use with Office 365. If you're less than 10 years since you first implemented AD, maybe you don't. So, but that's my rule of thumb. No guarantees on that, though. So we're going to take a look at this tool IDFix in a little bit. Office 365 does require a minimum forest functional level set to Windows Server 2003. This is not necessarily related to the specific version of the servers that you're running, but the schema in Active Directory has to be 2003. Also, and this can be a big thing, if you have multiple forests inside of Active Directory, you've got resource forests and various other things, then DirSync is not the right tool. And we have a couple of other tools, Azure AD Sync or Forefront Identity Manager 2010, which you could look at. Either of these tools will support synchronizing multiple forests to Azure AD. They have a couple of other downsides, so we'll look at that in another slide as well. If you have a directory other than Active Directory, you also can't use DirSync. DirSync specifically connects to AD, and we have a program for testing and validating other vendors' identity providers to test and qualify them for working with Office 365. So let's take a look at IDFix. This is a tool I recommend that you grab and run, which will take a look at your directory. This is the UX from it, and it will run when you hit this query button there about in the middle of the screen, and it will find any values of attributes in your directory which it has concerns about, and it will actually make recommendations to update most of those. So it'll identify and remediate your issues that will fail. Now, some of these issues will fail when you sync. Some of those will result in issues appearing in the event log. Office 365 will email you when there are some issues. Other issues won't come up until later. So it's recommended that you take a look at what the issues are, but definitely run the tool. It'll query your domain in the user that you're logged onto by default. So if you're just running as a user, it'll take a look at the directory from that user account. It will export, it can export the values that it's changing, and it has functionality for reporting on that and for undoing changes as well. This action column over here is where you define the actions. So if you specify edit, it's going to make an edit to the value. If you specify remove, it's going to remove the value. All right, and we do skip a few items where editing these because core issue was with your Active Directory. So here's a list of the errors that we look for. So duplicate items, duplicate proxy addresses, duplicate email addresses, we'll take a look for those. What happens if you synchronize a duplicate email address or a duplicate UPN into Microsoft Azure AD is the first one will work, and then the second one, whichever one comes next, is deemed to be the duplicate, and that will fail and result in an error being logged. So you don't know necessarily which the first one was that worked and was a problem. You don't know exactly which one was a problem. So we should take a look at this before you synchronize those up. Some invalid characters, overlength attributes, format errors, various things that you can enter in Active Directory that are not valid when used with Office 365. And then there's a few attributes that require values which cannot be blank. And non-routable domains. Does everyone know what a non-routable domain is? Typically, you'll see a non-routable domain as something, 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 dot local. A domain that ends in dot local is not accessible over the internet. It's not routable. It's not like www.microsoft.com, which is obviously routable to some servers that provide websites for Microsoft. If you go to microsoft.local, you can't go to that in a browser. You can't do a traceroute to it. It's not a routable domain on the internet. For a long time, people would use these non-routable domains for internal-only email systems as part of your internal network. And guess what? Ta-da! We're in the cloud now, so everything needs to be routable. You have to have real domains there. Microsoft has some default domains that you can use, which is your tenant name, .onmicrosoft.com. And those are routable internet domains. You have to use routable domains in your attributes. All right, so I want to switch over here and show you DirSync and IDFix. All right, make sure that comes up. All right, here it is. So here's my my Windows Server machine, and I have a directory ready, and I have a Active Directory here with some issues with some of its users. And I want to show you what happens. I've actually already run DirSync once on this machine, And the reason I've done that is DirSync runs in two passes. Although it's just a wizard install, you download and you run the executable. The first time you run it, it goes ahead and deploys all of the DirSync components. You know, it takes about 20 minutes. So I've done that in advance. At the end of that, once it's deployed all the components, and DirSync has uses SQL Server Express, stores a bunch of information for doing that comparison to make sure that it's sending differences up to Microsoft Azure AD and not the whole thing every time. So it uses SQL Server and some other components. Once it's finished that, it says, hey, do you want to configure DirSync right now? So I just unchecked that and said finish, and it puts this nice icon on the desktop so you can come back to it and do it later. So we'll run that, but before we run that, I'll run IDFix. IDFix has a privacy statement here. All right, so here's IDFix. IDFix is downloadable from the Microsoft Download Center, and I'm just going to go ahead and query the directory. And it's found this whole load of different issues here with my directory. And you can look at these. Some of them will look familiar. There's character errors. There's various non-routable domains and other things here. In fact, there's every kind of error in this directory, so that particularly so that we can test IDFix. So I want to show you primarily what happens if I say, let's accept the suggested updates. And I'll say, I am sure. All right, so it's got these updates in here, which are changes to this value column. And then over here on the right, it's saying what it's going to do. And in most cases, it's going to edit the value. There's a few cases it's not, but you know, I'm just going to go ahead and apply these. I'm going to say I want to get rid of all these errors. All right, so I've applied my my sets, and you can see the action's now set to complete. I'm going to run this query again, and you can see that there's a much smaller list here. This is basically all of the things that it didn't fix for me. And it looks like they're all duplicate email addresses, top-level domains. This is non-routable, of course, customer.local. So I can go ahead here and I'll just take these out for now. I'd like to have a clean report. You know, we don't have to take out all of the duplicates. We can leave in one of them. Say complete, and then all right, so now when I run these, let's try a query again. All right, so I've got a clean run of IDFix there. Okay, so now let me go and take a look at Office 365 tenant that I have. All right, so here's a tenant that I created just a bit earlier today, and you can see the dashboard, which is what you see when you first sign in to the Office 365 Admin Center, and I can go into the users and groups, and users and groups is where this is what we looked at before, where I would go in and create cloud users. So what I'm going to do here is change this to Active Directory Synchronization, and you can see here the six steps for running through and setting up synchronization. Now, I have already prepared for directory synchronization. I've run IDFix. I've told you about some of those things about your directory. And I don't have any custom DNS. So I haven't verified my domain. That's OK. We're going to synchronize just using the onmicrosoft.com domain that I have. All right, so the next thing I have to do is activate Active Directory synchronization. And this is going to configure my tenant to have synchronized users. And so now the tenant will be expecting these to be sent up. All right, and now the next step is to install the DirSync tool. I've installed it, so I need to configure it now. Let's switch back over to our tenant, our machine here, and we'll hit that back up as full screen. All right, and we're finished with IDFix. So now I'll run DirSync, and it's ready for configuring. So we're going to go through this wizard. It wants to know what my Microsoft Azure Active Directory administrator credentials are. These are going to be the credentials that I use for my tenant. So my tenant is paultechhead2 on Microsoft.com. and my super secure password. It's checking my password. All right, the next thing that I have to do here is I've got to provide the credentials for Active Directory. So we'll go into, put in my domain name here. All right, now I've got a question about hybrid deployment. I'm not going to be doing hybrid deployment, which enables you to do write-backs of some attributes. I'm going to enable password sync here, which if I leave that off, it doesn't synchronize passwords. If I turn it on, it's going to synchronize passwords every 2 minutes. And then it's going to configure the sync tool. So most of the work, most of the time required in installing DirSync is when it installs the components, when it's doing that. And we skip that because I've done that already on the server. Did that just a bit ago. So configuring is complete. And we'll go to next. And now I have the option to synchronize your directories now. And what this is going to do is just push the DirSync, the agents that run behind this, to say, actually do a synchronization right now. You can do this yourself by running PowerShell and pointing to the agents, and we have articles about how to do that. Typically, it's going to run every 3 hours if you don't do that. Let's go ahead and do that now. And it's got a link here that I can verify that we're synchronized, but actually what I'm going to do is go to the tenant and take a look. All right, so go back up to users and groups. How long does it take? Well, we're going to come back to that at the end of the talk and see if there's some users there. It should be running that synchronization in the background. In the meantime, let's switch back over here. All right. I want to see some users show up. Okay. So I wanted to talk about DirSync, and I obviously just ran the DirSync wizard on a single server there. What can you do in order, in terms of deploying DirSync for high availability, or what are your options there? Now, you can actually just run DirSync on your domain controller. We don't recommend it because DirSync installs SQL Server Express, and having SQL Server on a domain controller, which has a different kind of database, is not normally recommended. You get some memory contention and some other issues going on there. However, we are going to support running DirSync on a domain controller. So if you just have a really small implementation and you want to put DirSync on that single domain controller that you have and you don't have a lot of users, it's going to be okay. Most commonly, people will install DirSync on a single server. And you can support up to about 50,000 users synchronizing from a single Windows server machine. And that means DirSync is running on that server. It connects to your domain controller, which is separate. And DirSync also has SQL Server Express on that same server. You can have a standard install of SQL Server. You can use various SQL Server high availability and deployment topologies for SQL Server. So you might have two or three servers for your DirSync deployment that way. We don't provide a way of having high availability for DirSync itself. Okay, so I'll come to that in a moment. Consider using Azure. You can deploy DirSync in Azure. We have an article that shows you how to do that. Essentially, you're going to be creating a VPN from on-premises into a few servers in Azure Infrastructure as a Service, and you're going to install DirSync and a domain controller up there. All right, a couple of tips for DirSync implementation and reviewing what's going on. Be aware of directory object limits. By default, a new Office 365 tenant, like that trial tenant that I just created, will be able to synchronize 50,000 objects from an on-premises Active Directory. If you if you go ahead and add a custom domain, which I didn't do, then that limit is automatically increased to 300,000. And you can also call support and get that limit increased. We just do that as a way of ramping up new tenants and making sure that they don't get overloaded when they're first starting by some misconfiguration or synchronization error there. So watch out for those directory limits if you're working on large systems. Adding DNS domains to Office 365, this is the thing that I didn't do, which was in the list of things you should do. You need to do this before you run DirSync. Well, you don't have to. If you don't add your custom domains into your Office 365 tenant, then your synchronized users will not get to have UPNs with those custom domains. They get dropped, and you can only use your Microsoft Online, on Microsoft.com directory. So if you don't add your domains first up, then after you add them, you've got to go ahead and resynchronize those users to get them to use the custom domains. It's just a little tricky. It's just best to add it before. Sync now, if you do that PowerShell command, you expect about an hour per 5,000 objects. I didn't have 5,000. I'm not sure what I'm waiting for here. I'm worried about this. And then check the event logs after you've run. The DirSync is a fantastic wizard, and it's a little bit disarming, and you think, hey, I finished the wizard, I must be done. DirSync actually puts errors into the event log, and then we'll send you emails to let you know that something's gone wrong. So do take a look in that event log. One thing to watch out for is password expiry. That user that is running as DirSync, if that password expires, again, you'll get event log errors, and DirSync won't work. And one thing that DirSync doesn't do that you have to do manually is assign those Office 365 user licenses. And typically people will run some PowerShell to automatically assign these user licenses when they have new users. We don't automatically assign licenses to new accounts that are just synchronized up just because they are. All right, so I wanted to talk about high availability. And for DirSync, the question that we sometimes get asked is, I want to run DirSync on multiple servers. In case one has a hardware failure, the other one will take over. So I want to remind you, if you are in this circumstance or if you hear people asking about that, that DirSync is only synchronizing the users and the password hashes up to Microsoft Azure AD. It's not actually required for an Office 365 sign-in or any Office 365 operation. So if you have a DirSync server and it goes down, nothing is going to stop your Office 365 tenant from working. It's going to keep working. However, you're going to notice that you'll get event log errors on that DirSync server if it's still operational, and your updates to your users are not going to go through. So what you can do instead of having a high availability or a standby server is you could have a cold standby server where you have a spare Windows Server machine or a VM that is ready to install and configure DirSync on. DirSync install, we walked through it. It took just a few minutes, and so it shouldn't be a big burden to go ahead and run that install if your primary DirSync machine goes down. So that's our recommended way of having higher availability for DirSync, is to actually have another VM or a server ready, have DirSync ready to go but not configured, and so that you can configure it. And we actually have an article published about how to back up your SQL databases so that you can avoid that initial synchronization when DirSync first connects. You can back up those SQL databases, you can restore them, and you can also back up and restore the keys that DirSync uses to encrypt data that's in those databases. So we have an article about that as well. You can filter your directory so that not everything is sent up to DirSync. You can do it specifically on organizational units. So if you have a forest in AD, and you have multiple organizational units, you can specify which ones to sync. And that is the limit of how you can sort of query your local Active Directory into what it syncs up. Some customers ask about the security of password hashes. It tends to be financial industry companies or government vertical customers. Most people, lots of other industries do not ask about this. When we synchronize this password hash up into Azure AD, we don't get the password. We're not synchronizing the user's password. We get the hash that comes out of AD that AD uses to validate the password. And then we actually run a second hash on that password. And these hashes, they're called one-way hashes. And they're a mathematical operation which is not reversible. So we can't get the plain text password back from those hashes. So we do this one time to put it in AD, then we do it a second time before DirSync will send it up to Azure AD. DirSync will only connect to Azure AD, and it will only do that over an HTTPS channel. It won't connect to any other server, so it's not going to send those hashes anywhere else. It is a channel directly just to Azure AD. So Azure AD will have those hashes of hashes, and we have some more detail at this URL here. Microsoft takes our cloud security very, very seriously, and we've published a lot of material about how we do that and what precautions we take against any security issues happening. But we work very hard to earn your trust, and I recommend using password hash sync as a way to simplify your user access for on-premises in the cloud. Hey, I mentioned earlier that there are a couple of other tools that you can use for directory synchronization. DirSync is the tool that I've been talking about, and it's the one most commonly used for Office 365. Azure AD Sync Services is very recently announced and available in preview. It's not released for production use right now, but it is available in preview. And it is intended to, in the future, replace the DirSync tool. It does have one very attractive feature that it has right out of the gate, which is that it can synchronize from multiple on-premise forests. So if you have a directory with multiple forests, this is a tool you might be wanting to look at. It has one gap compared to DirSync right out of the gate right now in that it does not have password hash sync. However, because it is not released and not supported in production, we recommend DirSync at this time. The other tool that you can use is Forefront Identity Manager 2010 R2. So this is a tool that is more customizable, does allow multiple forests, allows you to use non-Microsoft directories such as LDAP v3 and other things. This is another option that you have. Forefront Identity Manager is a paid product that Microsoft sells, and typically it involves some sort of consulting work or configuration to set it up as well. All right, so now I'm going to talk about the federated identity model a little bit. And the federated identity model is the same as the synchronized identity model. So we've still got DirSync here. We're still synchronizing your user accounts. We may or may not still synchronize your passwords. Remember, that's just a tick box that you can check or not. And so we still have to provision those user accounts. There are a number of identity management solutions that are used on the internet, typically with public or consumer systems, which do not synchronize user accounts up front. And as a commercial system, Microsoft Azure AD and Office 365 do require that synchronizing of user accounts up front so that we can add licenses, so that we can make sure that those users are correctly shown up in the global address list and other things for the tenant. So we still do that synchronization. But then with the federated identity model, where there's a password validation to happen, we're actually going to delegate that or federate that with your on-premises servers. So it's your on-premises server, ADFS, Active Directory Federation Services, which is going to make that choice. So ADFS is the most capable of the three identity models. There are a lot of different things that you can do with ADFS. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking through ADFS or demoing the install in this talk. Suffice to say that if you have one of the scenarios that ADFS solves that I'm going to talk about pretty shortly, then more research is going to be required. You want to make sure that you read all of the TechNet documentation that's available, or you find an identity management professional who has that training and background to deploy ADFS. There's a bit more work involved in doing that than just running the DirSync tool and setting it up like I showed you here. One great thing that ADFS has that is a recent feature improvement that we have is if your If your ADFS service goes down, well, this is not the great thing. The great thing is the resolution. But if your ADFS infrastructure, such as your internet connection or your ADFS server or your proxy server, goes down, then your users can't sign in because we're using those on-premises servers to validate passwords. So users can't sign in. This is a critical problem. We recommend high availability for those servers. But if you're having to troubleshoot them or you're having to redeploy them, you can actually use password hash sync as a backup. You can configure password hash sync as part of your dir sync configuration. And then, although you won't have your ADFS and whatever functionality you're using in that, if you turn it off and switch back to synchronized identity model, then your users will be able to sign in right away with their on-premises passwords. And we made this change about a week and a half ago. And prior to this change, if you synchronize passwords up to Azure AD and you're using federated model for your domain, we wouldn't take those password hashes. We'd drop them, and we wouldn't record them. And what this means is if you switched back to synchronized, there would be no passwords there. And you'd either have to generate a random one or configure password synchronization at that point. So this is a really neat change. It's a simple change. But it has great implications for perhaps a DR scenario where you've got a problem with your internet connection or your ADFS infrastructure and you want to switch and keep people working. All right, here's my diagram from the start of the talk split up a little bit. So I'm going to talk about how to choose between the three identity models. And before I do that, I want to talk briefly about how you change between these models, because what I really want to get across to you is, apart from us recommending that you choose the simplest model, it's really easy to change between these models. All Office 365 tenants start out as a cloud-managed identity in the cloud-managed identity model, so you can go ahead and click that plus and add users. And if you switch to the synchronized model, we'll do a thing called a soft match or a hard match of users. So maybe you already do have an on-premises directory, but you do want to start off with cloud-managed in any case. If you switch from cloud-managed to synchronized and you already have users configured, we'll match up based on the email addresses or the UPNs. We'll actually look at a couple of those different email attributes there and try and find those users. If we find multiple users that match, we won't do the match. We'll have an error. But if we find one user and only one user that matches, you get a soft match and you're good to go. A hard match, by the way, up here, is actually based on a GUID attribute called immutable ID. And once there's an initial synchronization between an on-premises directory, and Microsoft Azure AD, then that immutable ID is connected between those two. And that hard match will always take precedence. So going from synchronized identity to federated identity, this is purely saying, hey, we deployed ADFS. We went from a synchronized system where our directory is synchronized with dir-sync, and we deployed ADFS, and now we have that federated sign-in. So that's what that's about. If you go from federated identity to synchronized identity, you're using this PowerShell command, convert MSOL domain to standard. And you do this on a domain-by-domain basis, by the way. The domain is talking about the domain setup for your UPN. So whatever the mycompany.onmicrosoft.com, whatever your real domain is when you're federating that, that's the domain that we're talking about there. And you can actually get into some interesting things where you might have company.com, and then you might have subdomain.company.com and subdomain1.company.com. It's possible to federate all of those subdomains separately if you know what you're doing. Sometimes people want to do that. So federating, going back to synchronized, you're using this PowerShell command. It takes 2 hours to do that change back, plus 1 hour additional per 2,000 users. So it's just one PowerShell command, but it takes a little bit of time to run that through. And then the last one there is if you want to switch from synchronized to purely cloud-managed, there's a PowerShell command there. This can take some time to run through. It's nominally a 72-hour operation. You can monitor how long it's taking. It does occasionally run much shorter, it does occasionally run much longer, but this is switching back to cloud managed. It's reasonably rare that people do that. They go, hey, I don't want any of my servers anymore on premises, so I'm going to throw them out and I'm going to go cloud managed. Once you've got servers on premises, you tend to keep them until they wear out, right? But if you do want to make that switch, and certainly we've had customers do that, where they go cloud only, this is the PowerShell command you need. So our recommendation is to choose the simplest model for your needs. Now, if all you need is what's available with cloud managed, maybe because you have no on-premises directory, or maybe because your on-premises directory is undergoing some restructuring and it's a complicated project and it's going to take a whole lot of time, you just go cloud managed. You can synchronize those users later on with a soft match, and don't worry about it too much. Or maybe you're just in a pilot with Office 365. Cloud managed is a great way to pilot and get your users up and running and using Office 365. In our Fast Track program, which is the way we encourage people to deploy and onboard to Office 365, we recommend everyone start with cloud managed. Start out, get your users using Office 365. You don't have to do any integration with on-premises. You don't even have to talk to the person who manages the directory on-premises. It's really easy to get started. So our recommendation is choose the simplest model for your needs. And then if your needs change, you can change models. It's no problem. All right, so if you have an on-premises directory, then you're probably going to use the synchronized identity model. You're probably already managing your users with some system on-premises. And so you know, you're going to want to synchronize those up to the cloud rather than editing them in two places. Editing users in two places gets old real quick when you've got users requesting changes, I tell you. So password hash sync is a relatively new feature. It came online in June last year, June of 2013. And prior to that, lots of people, when deploying Office 365, would deploy ADFS just to get the same password on-premises and in the cloud. So this change means you don't have to use ADFS just to get the same password on-premises and in the cloud. We sometimes talk about this as same sign-in. It's not the same as single sign-in, which is a term used to denote, hey, I've signed in once on my PC that's connected to my domain controller in my domain, and then I don't have to sign in again when I go to a cloud service. It's called single sign-in. It also happens to be the same password on-premises in the cloud. Same sign-in is what we achieve with password hash sync. We're not signing you in with the same identity provider, but we are able to sign you in with the same password. So your user might have to use a password on-premises and then use it again when they go to their cloud services, but it'll be the same password. We provide in Office 365 remember my password, little tick boxes. What those actually do is those will go ahead and save the password that you've just typed in into Windows Credential Manager. Credman is a special part of your NT user, which is encrypted and held secure by your login password. So those passwords are effectively secured by your login password to the PC. So if you use save my, remember my password in those dialogues of Office 365, your users won't have to use enter their password multiple times there. When I'm talking about single sign-in, I do want to point out that Outlook actually does not support single sign-in. So if anyone is using Outlook with Exchange and you haven't checked the save my password box, you're going to have to enter it every time that you run up Outlook. So lots of people get familiar with checking the box in Outlook and not having to enter that multiple times. It's secured into the Windows Credential Manager. Outlook actually does not support single sign-in today. All right, so we recommend you choose password hash sync unless you have one of the scenarios that requires federation. All right, so I've got a few of these scenarios for which you might want to use federation. So the first one's really obvious, and the first ones are just around existing infrastructure. You already have ADFS deployed. It's really easy to configure federation if you already have ADS deployed. You're just going into your Office 365 tenant, and you're configuring where the ADFS endpoints are, and then you're done. If ADFS is already there and it's already serving for some other SaaS application or some other application you've built, then you're probably going to be using Federation for this one as well. If you have a third-party identity provider, one that is not from Microsoft, lots of people have these. It's really difficult to switch from one identity provider to another identity provider because you have lots of systems that use them. And so Microsoft has this program for testing and qualifying these. However, third-party identity providers are not do not have a DirSync equivalent that will do password hash synchronization. So if you don't have if you have a third-party identity provider, then you're probably going to be wanting to do federated sign-in so that you can get the same password on-premises and in the cloud. And they typically have other features that provide value when you do that as well. So password hash sync is not available with these things, so you're probably using Federation. And then number three, existing infrastructure, if you're using Forefront Identity Manager, we talked about this already, it doesn't support password hash sync. So I have a few technical requirements. First was existing infrastructure. This is technical requirements for choosing Federation. If you have multiple forests in your on-premises AD, hopefully you'll remember from earlier in the talk, DirSync does not support multiple forests. So if you need multiple forests synchronized, you're going to be using a sync tool that doesn't support password hash sync. So you're probably going to want to use Federation. If you have an on-premises integrated smart card or multi-factor authentication solution. Now, Office 365 has multi-factor authentication. You can use our solution that's included with Office 365 licenses and is part of Microsoft Azure AD today. If you're already using an existing multi-factor authentication solution, this means you have your password, something you know, and then some kind of token, a smartphone or a certificate, something you have, two factors of authentication. If you already have a system that does that and it's integrated to your Active Directory, then you're probably going to be using a federated solution because ADFS has extensibility for adding these things in. You can people sell these different multi-factor authentication solutions. They integrate with ADFS. So it's a typical scenario where you'll use Federation for your identity model. All right, we're slogging through these scenarios. This is the point at which you're supposed to get, oh, yeah, I just need password hash sync. Well, unless you have one of these scenarios. I usually find that these scenarios don't impact a lot of people, but if they do impact you, they're really important, and they're not something you can just say, hey, I just don't need that. I can just avoid that. So I wanted to call out what all of these are. Custom hybrid applications or custom search. Now, this is talking about where you use SharePoint Online and SharePoint on-premises, and you've integrated them. And maybe you're using search across the SaaS part of it and the on-premises part of it. Now, when you do that, it's really convenient to have single sign-on because it means your user is signing on with the cloud service at the same time that they're signing on with the on-premises service, right? So I get the problem is if you haven't done that, potentially your user goes to your website that has some parts on-premises, some parts in the cloud, and they have to enter their password twice. So you typically want to avoid that. So if you have a hybrid application, a hybrid search, this is custom development kind of stuff, then you're probably going to want to use Federation. And then number seven there, web accessible forgotten password reset. If you're using ADFS, you can actually modify the login page for ADFS, and you can add a forgot password link on there, and then you can go and implement password reset so that your users can have password reset accessed from the cloud. So that's a great reason to use ADFS. It's also possible to use Azure Active Directory Premium, a new subscription service that we have, which is added to your tenant. It's a paid service which provides password reset. So sometimes ADFS will be something you want to do because it gives you password reset. So those are my technical requirements. We did existing infrastructure, technical requirements, and then policy requirements are the last four. So the first policy requirement is if you or your organization requires sign-in audit or immediate disable. So sign-in audit, what am I talking about there? When your users sign in, if they get their password correct or incorrect, if they're signing in on-premises, There's always a record written into the event log. It's always in there, it's shown. And you don't get that when someone signs in the cloud. If they sign in, their password's correct or wrong in Azure AD, there is no audit that you can go and say, you can go and take a look at. There's no event viewer that you can run up. So this is a reason sometimes people will do federation. All of your authentications are done on your domain controller still. So what if you have a central logging system or management system, that's still going to be there. Immediate disable talks about, hey, I've blocked this user or I've removed their account. I want them to not have access anymore. This is your employee termination procedures. If you disable an account on premises and you're synchronizing those account details, then we have a 3-hour synchronization window. It might take up to 3 hours for us to synchronize that change up to the cloud. So immediate disable for ADFS means I've disabled the user on the domain controller. They can no longer sign in with federated sign-in. Now, there may be delays on them losing their access to be able to sign in. There's cache credentials. There's deployment delays that might happen as you're replicating across your domain controllers. On the other hand, you can actually immediately disable account in the cloud. You just have to do more than disable the account. You have to change the password or do something else that's going, or go on to the cloud admin portal and disable the user there. You've got to take an extra step to do that. So, you know, this could be a reason, but there are ways of working around it if you don't have federation. If single sign-in is required, many customers will still require single sign-in in that they don't want the user, they want as few passwords to be required as possible, and federation is the way to get single sign-in. I signed onto my PC at the start of the day, and I don't have to sign in to Office 365 when I go to services that support single sign-in. Require client sign-in restrictions by network location or work hours. Now, AD has various settings that you can set to allow people only to sign in during certain hours of the day, and those are honored by a federated sign-in because they're done on the domain controller. You don't get that with a Microsoft Azure AD sign-in. Similarly, network location is a configuration item in ADFS. You can specify different permissions for users signing in from inside the network to signing in outside the network. You can limit them to certain services there if you're using ADFS. And then the last one, policy preventing synchronized passwords to Azure AD. I talked about our security commitment and what we do with these password hashes earlier in the talk. If you have one of those organizations or one of those customers that can't permit that, then this is a reason for using federation. No password is ever outside of your organization or a password hash or anything that is derived from a password if you use federated sign-in. Hey, I want to take a moment to switch back and just for anyone who didn't believe me, I did hear five a couple of times while I was talking, and my users did come up, so I just wanted to show you that. All right. All right, so I have just a couple more things left to talk about. If you are looking at federation, then we have a few different federation options. The end-to-end Microsoft stack is Active Directory Federation Services, built on your Active Directory domain controller with additional Microsoft software. In Office 365 and Microsoft Azure AD, we do also support Office 365 when it's used with tested and qualified third-party identity providers. And so this is these third-party WS Star providers. And we recently added SAML2 into that mix so that we can support identity providers that use SAML2. Now, there's a downside with SAML2. SAML2 only supports passive auth. It doesn't support active auth. And this means that if you're using an identity provider that does SAML2, it won't support the rich Office clients. So you can't use Link, you can't use Outlook, you can't use Word and Excel. Well, you can use Word and Excel, but you can't use your cloud licensing, our cloud licensing technology for licensing the Office client because it requires you to be authenticated. So there's a couple of downsides there. We certainly do have certain classes of customers this is really valuable for. Shibboleth is an example of a SAML 2 provider. It's an open source one, and it's commonly used in education environments. So there's some federation options that you have there. I've got a little bit of information here about the works with Office 365 Identity Program. This is the program that we do test and qualify third-party identity providers. And here's a list of the ones that we have qualified to date listed there. And you can see the difference between the WS Trust, WS Federation versus the SAML. We are actually improving the way that SAML identity providers will work. By the end of the year, we have announced that we're going to upgrade our Office clients so that they work with passive auth identity providers. So we're going to have an update to our clients so that we won't have those issues with passive auth identity providers. And this also allows us to do some nice things with multi-factor authentication right to those clients. I have a talk on multi-factor authentication later in the week that I'll talk about that. And it also it enables additional extensibility in the future with different types of sign-in there. This URL, the aka.ms/SSO providers, goes to a TechNet page that lists the providers, any exceptions to the testing that we found, and the version numbers that we tested. All right. Hey, there's one last thing that I just wanted to call out. There's been quite a lot of improvements over time to sign-in in Office 365. We work to make sure that we write up these things. We have the blogs.office.com. We write articles about new things that come up. But it is worth trying to keep up with these new things that come out in case you can use them in your environment. We have a pretty strong communication strategy for updates. If there's an administrator change, for example, we will give you 12 months of notice before you have to make that change. But we categorize different changes that we make and provide lots of notice. But there has been some great stuff for sign-in that's coming, and that team is really firing on all cylinders and doing a lot of great stuff. So these are just an example of some of the things that have come up now, some of which I've talked about today. And if you recognized my three models, cloud identity, synchronized identity, and federated identity, they do line up directly with our fast-track onboarding process. Fast-track has tons of great documentation and support for onboarding into Office 365. In the pilot phase, we suggest that you go to a cloud identity model only. In the deploy phase, we suggest that you go to the synchronized model. And in the enhanced phase, that's the time that you want to look at whether you do the federated model or whether that's not something that you need. So take a look at this fast track. Lots of great help for supporting onboarding to Office 365 there. Hey, so here's my summary here. I recommend that you choose the simplest identity model that meets your needs. And if your needs change or if someone calls you and says, do more work, then you can change the model pretty easily. It's not a big drama to switch from one to the other or switch back down. Hopefully some of what I've told you today has been helpful in being able to choose one identity model over the other. I actually published a pretty long blog post talking about choosing between these models and the different federated scenarios that you would have this morning. So that's just been published today. And has a lot of the same information, but maybe in a different tone or with some more information, and certainly with more links to how you actually do stuff on the Office blog. If I was to summarize how you choose between these identity models in a single sentence, then you have to say that cloud identity model is the simplest to deploy. Federated identity model is the most capable. You can do the most things with it. And synchronized identity is just the one we see the most customers actually using. So it's kind of a nice thing in the middle there, but you have those choices. All right. Okay, so we're just about out of time here. It shows I have 11 minutes left. I got some related content you might want to check out. A couple more identity management sessions that we have in the show that are coming up. And We would love for you to join us at the Garage Live. I had a session there earlier today, and it's a load of fun. And I've been asked to ask you to please come and eval the sessions here and tell us what you think. Give us ideas for future content. Let us know what we can do better. We sure appreciate it. We love coming back here. I love coming back here and talking about different stuff to you guys. So thanks very much. Hey, you've been a great audience. I still have about 10 minutes for questions. I'd love for people to come to the mics, or if people wander off, you're welcome to come up to the desk as well. Thanks very much. Yeah.
This mic is on. I was very excited to hear that OAuth was coming out for Outlook.com, and it's been very
yep.
good. Any chance that that's going to find its way over to Office 365?
Yes. In fact, OAuth is coming to Outlook.com, and this is the same underlying technology. I think they just posted some details about that. That we are going to be using for sign-in to Office 365. And we'll be negotiating to get the SAML token over that OAuth protocol. OAuth is kind of like the wrapper protocol, and we will do the sign-in underneath that and then show whatever the identity provider, Azure AD or another identity provider's sign-in web page so that essentially everything becomes passive auth back to the sign-in provider. So yes, I think they just recently, this week, published more details about that, and they're talking about that this week.
Okay, great.
Yep. Over here?
We have a synchronized environment in our organization because we have about 15,000 users.
Yep.
Would you please speculate, if you can, on how long you think it'll be before we'll have cloud only for that number of users?
For your environment?
Yeah, for a 15,000 user environment. 2 years? Never. I'll take any answer.
I'm going to say it depends. You know, I used to work in Microsoft Consulting Services. I probably need some more information about that, probably some futures information too. I know that there are some interesting things being considered for future directory work. I don't represent the directory team at Microsoft, so I don't want to speak for them. But there certainly are some exciting things there that are going on.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have regional ADs, different domains. You talked about federating multiple forests. Can we federate multiple ADs?
You have disconnected directories.
Right. We have North America, Asia Pacific, and then several in Europe.
And you have no trust relationships between them?
Some of them, various trusts. That one we could remedy. We could fix that part of it.
Okay. If you can put trusts between them, then we can synchronize them and federate them.
And one of them has to be primary in that situation, or?
I'm not sure. You'll have to get into some more details with that project.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Over here.
On the sync tool, you'd mentioned that you can take and sync down to an OU level.
Yes.
But the wizard was next. And you also used your own ID opposed to a service ID. So how do you configure this to sync directly from the start a specific OU level or group level or even attribute level like was mentioned in another session?
Yep. DirSync has a wizard for install, and it's pretty nice. It also allows you to install without using the wizard. So if you want to specify the OUs, you actually need to use PowerShell to configure what OUs that it synchronizes. You also need to avoid the wizard if you're using not using SQL Express. So it does have a mode where you install without running that wizard, which will do both of those things. I wanted to answer your question also about the attributes.
Okay.
You can, with Forefront Identity Manager, you can specify an attribute which has to be a certain value before it syncs. I'm not sure whether that has made its way into DirSync or not, but Forefront Identity Manager certainly enables that, where you can specify a particular attribute in your on-premises directory, and if that attribute is a certain value, then you sync it. Otherwise, you sync the object. Otherwise, you don't.
Okay. Yeah, that's what they had mentioned in the development of Office or deploying Office 365. They'd mentioned OU, a group, like if you had a group for Office 365 users to look at it, or at an attribute level. And I assumed it would be a custom attribute you set with a value.
Yes. You can.
So that may not work.
You can specify an attribute. I think that one's in DirSync. I'm sorry, I'm a little hazy here. I think specifying a group is going to require you to do some custom work, and not using DirSync. You definitely cannot have a group in Active Directory and say, hey, this group of people is what you're going to synchronize. It has to be an OU or an attribute.
But if I download the tool and I try and run the wizard, it's going to sync everything. So I need to not do that.
If you just run the wizard, it will set up to sync everything, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Another?
I think we're configured in every environment way that you mentioned. We're DirSynced. We have FIM. We use ADFS. We're about to put a lot of people in the cloud and a hybrid exchange.
I'm not going to be able to answer this one, am I?
I'm wondering if you can talk to how you do licensing.
Licensing of?
Of the users in Office 365.
Licensing of users in Office 365 is done on a subscription basis. You subscribe to a certain number of seats, and then you assign those licenses to users that are in the directory. But you can do that license assignment in the UX, in our UI. You can also do it through PowerShell. You can say assign this license, remove this license, and you can remove licenses off users who have them and then apply them to others. Does that help?
Sort of. We're getting asked to kind of do that with FIM.
You can execute those PowerShell commands as part of a FIM onboarding process.
Are you aware of people that do that?
Absolutely, people do that. I'm not familiar with how you go about doing that, but yes, that is a very common use of FIM for as part of the provisioning process that it deploys. Yep.
Okay. We're looking to find details as to the best way to do that. You know, should FIM call PowerShell? Should it be?
FIM is one of those things where you're going to have people who know FIM to do that. Once you have that, tell them to provision with PowerShell the licenses, and
that would be me.
TechNet then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I don't have the detail.
That's all right.
There's more over here.
Yeah. So we attempted to use FIM for multi-force support and didn't really have a good time doing that. Are there plans to add multi-force to the DirSync wizard or multi-force support at all to DirSync in the near future? It kind of was hinted to me that there was a beta version or something coming.
There's a preview version of Microsoft Azure Active Directory Sync Services, which is that alternative to DirSync that I mentioned and is intended to replace it in the long term. And it does support multiple forests. In its wizard, you can actually add multiple forests and go through and set that up. DirSync does not have that right now, and that new tool is in preview, so it's not for production use. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Do you know if that's going to be something that you have to have Azure Premium to get and use, or is that something that you get with a Office 365 subscription?
I'm not sure that pricing has been announced for that. There is an Azure AD Premium. It's typically for where there's a hybrid solution or write back to on-premises, but I'm not sure that more detail has been announced. That would come on the blogs.technet.com/b/AD, which is the Active Directory team blog. They announce those kind of things.
Okay, perfect, thanks.
Uh-huh. Over here.
Hi. So we are already in dedicated Office 365, and...
I'm sorry, you've already what?
We are already in a dedicated environment. Office
dedicated?
Yeah.
Okay, so not the Office 365 multi-tenant environment?
Not that. I believe we are in dedicated. So from what I've heard is that Microsoft is moving towards more and more about Azure IDs. Now, we have a tool called Mississippi, which is kind of similar synchronization tool as you have mentioned, DirSync. So is that going forward direction that DirSync, is it going to stay, or is it something which would be taken over by Azure going forward? Because I hear and I see that Azure is a big focus right now by Microsoft.
DirSync is supported for production use right now, so it has a good support lifecycle there. DirSync is actually a tool from the Windows Azure AD team also. So it is their tool, and they support it. Because you have a dedicated setup, there are certainly some differences in the identity management there. And I would recommend that you talk to the folks at Microsoft who manage that and help you with that, just to find out exactly what your roadmap is for identity management. Because I know there are some variances with different dedicated customers of what that intention is.
Yeah, while we were going through the slides, I was trying to map where our environment fits in.
Right. No, it doesn't right now. All of what I've been talking about is about the multi-tenant environment. Dedicated does have some differences for identity management, and because it's not based on Microsoft Azure Active Directory, some of this will not apply.
Okay. But last question. Do you think in future, or at least if you can give some idea, whether...
Can I predict the future? No.
No, I'm sure you know what's going on within Microsoft. We have a tool called Mississippi, and then we have DirSync. Is there any future growth or any conversions of these technologies, or they'll be totally separate, and that we are pretty much left out of features which might be available in multi-tenant environment?
I know there are a couple of different roadmaps for dedicated customers for identity management, and I don't know which dedicated customers are on which of the roadmaps or what the details are, but you would need to talk to the people at Microsoft who manage that for you. We have a very small number of dedicated customers, so it most of what we talk about at TechEd is about the multi-tenant environment that the majority of customers here. I'm sorry, I don't have more detail on that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm out of time, and I'm going to get off the stage, but you're welcome to keep asking questions until they kick me out.